natmanan anti kauman swaganam chaveda. Tam biksha deva iti kandu kalila jeshat. Bridas putas mita brisista kataksha mushta. Stri prekshana pratishamikshana bivalatma. Natmanan antikauman swaganam chaveda. Tan biksha deva iti kandu kalila jeshat. Bridashputasmita brishista katakshamushta. Stri prekshana pratishamikshana vivalatma. Natmanan antikauman swaganans chaveda. Please chant.
Thank you.
tam her viksha after observing devaha Lord Shambhu iti in this way kandukali laya by playing with the ball isat slight vrida by bashfulness ashfuta not very distinct smita with smiling vrishishta sent katakshamushtaha defeated by the glances stri prekshana by glancing at the beautiful woman pratishamikshana and by constantly being watched by her vivala atma whose mind was agitated na not atmanam himself antike situated nearby umam his wife mother Uma swaganancha and his associates Veda Lord Shiva could understand translation and purport by his divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. While Lord Shiva observed the beautiful woman playing with the ball, she sometimes glanced at him and slightly smiled in bashfulness. As he looked at the beautiful woman, she watched him. He forgot both himself and Uma, his most beautiful wife, as well as his associates nearby. Purport. The material bondage of this world is that a beautiful woman can captivate a handsome man, and that a handsome man can captivate a beautiful woman. Such are the affairs that began when Lord Shiva observed the beautiful girl playing with the ball. In such activities, the influence of Cupid is very prominent. As both parties move their eyebrows and glance at one another, their lusty desires increase more and more. Such reciprocation of lusty desires took place between Lord Shiva and the beautiful woman. Even though Uma and Lord Shiva's associates were by Lord Shiva's side, such is the attraction between man and woman in the material world. Lord Shiva was supposed to be above all this attraction, but he was victimized by the captivating power of Lord Vishnu. Rishabhdev thus explain the nature of lusty attraction. Punsa striya mituni bhavan etam tayor mito hridaya grantin adhu ato griha chetra sutappavitair janasya moho jam aham mameti. Quote, the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the heart of the male and the female, one becomes attached to his body, home, property, children, relative, and wealth. In this way, one increases life illusion and thinks in terms of I and mine. End of quote. Bhagavatam 5.5.8. When a man and a woman exchange feelings of lust, both of them are victimized and thus are bound to this material world in various ways.
Tanbiksha deva iti kandukali layeshat bridash putash mita vishista kataksha mushta stri prekshana prati shamikshana vivalatma natmanan antika uman swaganans chabeda. While Lord Shiva observed the beautiful woman playing with the ball, she sometimes glanced at him and slightly smile in bashfulness. As he looked at the beautiful woman and she watched him, he forgot both himself and Uma, his most beautiful wife, as well as his associates nearby. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyare Satarine. Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So there you have it, folks. That is the... That's how it happens. And I'm sure directly or indirectly, we have experienced more or less this description that is here, that one looks at one, the other one looks at the other one, and then the eyebrows move, and then like that, and then, oh, then the connection is made. Then she likes me, oh, he likes me, and then all those feelings start to come out, and then they increase, and then the next thing you know is like you're trying to smile, and then she goes. So we've seen, how many times we've seen this, how many times we experience this in some way, especially in the Western countries. This is sort of made in such a way that is almost like the goal of life, the picture of the man, this very beautiful beach, and the man and the woman running at each other and then embracing and then going around like that. How many times we've seen that? And then obviously other cultures, such as, you know, our Indian culture, that following the West, then they create the mirror or the reflection of this whole you know, what Hollywood does in terms of making this whole affair of man and woman in such a, you know, grandiose manner. But the Indian culture, modern Indian culture, they create Bollywood, and they do it in a very also super, you know, heightened type of manner. And this becomes so ingrained in our culture, so ingrained, that is almost like we're supposed to do that. So I remember one time when we first moved from the Tobacco Temple, we, a group of devotees, my wife and myself, we got a preaching center, and in this college town, two family homes. And at one point, when the preaching center closed, eventually, we have to rent the apartment upstairs. And then we rented it to a congregation, a young couple, Indian couple. There was this boy who was part of our congregation, and then he recently married, so he brought his wife. And then one good winter, you know, the first snow, you know, storm, you know, after the non-storm, there was all white outside. And then the girl, for the first time, was seeing snow, so she was very excited. And they came out, and then, you know, I was in my kitchen, you know, cooking, and my wife was there, you know, and then we look out the window, and we see this scene that it was like, oh my God. then there is the girl behind the car goes like this, and then he goes like this, and then they throw a ball and it goes like ooh. So it was, the whole exchange was like, you know, out of the Bollywood movie. You just needed the music and then the dance and the whole thing. So so these are things that happens. And then in our Western culture, especially say the culture that I grew up, which is Western, you know, and it's basically the same thing, but also in the Latin culture is very, especially, you know, Latin America, they get into this thing of the what a man is supposed to do and what a woman is supposed to do. In my country, in Venezuela, the women are supposed to be like, they spend so much time. It's actually, it is explained that Venezuela is a country that the ladies spend the most resources to fix themselves. Even if they're not very good looking, somehow or other, they make themselves, they pump themselves, they, you know, put so much stuff, they dress them, you know, that they have, you know, they try to make themselves very attractive. So it's a cultural thing for the woman to be very, very attractive. They make themselves like that. And the man, it's a cultural thing that you're supposed to, you know, get the girl, you know, so it's a macho type of thing. So these macho things for Latins, you know, it's like, you know, the classic guy, you know, the thing, you know, the Spanish macho, you know, si, señorita type of thing. So it's very much part of the culture. So it's celebrated. You expect it to be. I mean, you see how degraded and how far the whole, this whole culture of sense gratification has gone, that when you're a child, remember being like, you know, 6 years old, you know, babies basically, that the last thing that you're thinking about those stuff, you know, you see everybody, you know, as your playground friends. You're not thinking about sex. But then you're being almost like guided by society to almost, you know, conquer the girl and things like that. So these things are being ingrained. So you're expected, is celebrated when a child, when you have your first girlfriend, you know, as a, you know, 9 years old or something like that, like really. And oh, he had a, you get a girlfriend, oh, she, like little girlfriend, you know, and like that. On the other side, so the father of a boy is very, and the mother, the whole family is like, yes, very nice, you know, this is very healthy, you know, he's going in the right path. The father of the girl starts to get a little nervous, like my brother, you know, he have two girls, and he says, you know, like, you know, when he hears about a girl, a boy, some boy coming, he's like, like suspicious. And then, you know, what is this thing happening here? You know, so because the culture is like that, the culture is highly sexualized. Like you're supposed to, you know, conquer. And anyway, I can go on and it can get even more gross in terms of what arrangements are made that are supposedly healthy to encourage, you know, this type of culture. So so Prabhupada mentioned here, he brings up the instructions of Lord Rishabhdev to his sons, which are very famous, especially for specifically the circumstances in which Lord Rishabhdev was given this instruction, what to his sons, his 100 sons, and it was about brahmacharya. But further than the principle of brahmacharya, he was talking to his brahmachari sons, but he was giving a principle of actually that applies in all stages of life, including grihastha. Because as Prabhupada mentioned, once you get trained in the proper culture, the culture, this particular thing that Lord Risha did, this set of instructions, the culture of tapo divyam. Tapo divyam is a recommendation that Lord Risha did give to his sons. He says that what is the purpose of human life? This human life, he was explaining that once received, all the living entities in this material world, they embody, they receive a body. But this human life is very special. He highlighted the importance of the human life, because the human life has a very specific purpose. And the specific purpose of the human life is tapo divyam. Tapo divyam means divine austerity. It's meant for sacrifice and austerity, for achieving a divine purpose. So this is the culture that is given. And once one embrace and being trained in that culture, tapo divyam, that also applies in your other stages of life, including, you know, the grihastha ashram. We often, in our, you know, talks among the brahmacharis, highlight this very principle, that what are we doing here? Well, basically, we're learning about this tapo divyam process. That's the focus. We're learning these principles of simplicity, renunciation, control of the senses, and based on transcendental knowledge. So, vairagya and vidya. Vairagya also means renunciation. So, this body is designed, the human body is designed for performing these activities, for performing sacrifice. And that is a system, the perfect system that Krishna has given, the performance of sacrifice for humans. And then once we get trained on that, then we apply the same principles when we move to our next stage of life, if we move to that. You know, the grihastha ashram becomes the same principle. So Prabhupada defines the grihasthas as grihastha brahmacharis, because it's the same principles apply, the same principles of celibacy applies, the same principles of controlling the senses apply, and the same principles of engaging in the sacrifice of devotional service applies. So for Lord Rishadev explained that for those who are not culture in this principle, rather culture in the aim of sense gratification, then for them it's a completely different thing. It's explained, Prabhupada explains, that this human body is like a junction. A junction means that there's two roads, you know, you come to a fork. It's like a cross, how you say, crossroad? Crossroad, right? So you can only have two choices. You can go to the aim is this tapio divyam, this transcendental position, or this sense gratification. and they lead to two different places. So the path of tapo divyan leads to liberation, the path of sense gratification leads to hellish life. Hellish life. So Lord Rishadev says this very famous, Prabhupada quotes this verse also a lot. Nunam pramata kurute bikarma yat indriya pitaya aprinoti. Aprinoti. The person who is completely, that he's following this process of sense gratification, that the aim of life is sense gratification, is described by Lord Rishadev as pramata. That's also a word that is very often appear, you know, in the scriptures, pramata. Pramata means mad, completely mad. So it becomes completely mad after this gratifying the senses. The madness means, you know, that you lose all sense of reality and all you know, your choices are completely covered by an illusory type of reality. Illusory reality doesn't make sense. Illusory situation, right? There's no such a thing as illusory reality. Doesn't make sense. So, like an illusion. So you become mad. So pramata kurute bikarma. So what happens when you become mad and you lose the sense of reality? You engage in bikarma. Bikarma means sinful activities. You're forced to engage in sinful activities. There's no escape. Lord Krishna explains that you know, what is the cause of sinful activities? It is lust for enjoying the senses. And the more you give, it's like basically you simply adding fuel to the fire. The fire becomes stronger and needs more fuel. So that's the nature of lust. So you're forced to act sinfully. So this is a translation of that verse that Prabhupada gave. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad at the materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activities. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. So that is the cause of being completely caught in this material creation. And as Lord Rishadev goes, what is the highest manifestation of this this culture of sense gratification is sex life. So he goes to say, yeah, he comes to this verse that Prabhupada quotes, the Punsan Striya Mituni Bhavan Etan. Mituni Bhavan means attraction for sexual life. And that's considered the basic principle of this material sense gratification. That is, you know, their thing. So everything goes around that. What is that says, you know, that sex makes the world go round, right? So that is the principle that moves everything. So why do we want to be wealthy? Well, because wealth will allow us to have sense gratification, and that sense gratification will be of having, you know, nice sexual arrangement. Prabhupada often he goes to say that this, especially in this Western world, so much facilities are made, so much endeavor is made to actually create this whole culture of, you know, enjoying sex life. And but what does that do? That once that's there, especially when it comes to you know, when the attraction happens, then this hridaya granting happens, which is a very strong knot of material connections happens. And then that knot is basically very, very difficult to untie. Once is almost like the biblical imagery of the forbidden fruit. Once you taste it, you're done. Like what Jainita Prabhu was saying, game over, you know, yesterday. So the whole thing is game over. So once that is tight, then it's very difficult to dissolve, to untie. And then what happens, once that knot becomes tight, then you start to put other, you know, pieces of rope, and more, you become more attracted to the body, home, property, children, relative, wealth, etc., etc. Everything just keep adding to it. And once become very absorbed in the whole concept of mine, and this is who I am. My family, my wife, my husband, my girl, my this, my that, and it's finished, it's game over. Then, you know, that's the situation. So therefore, when Lord Chaitanya was asked, what is the characteristic, how you'd recognize a Vaishnava? What is the character and the characteristic of a Vaishnava? How you recognize him? He responded by this, asatyaga e Vaishnava achar. The achar of a Vaishnava is that he does not associate, or he avoids the association of asat, the non-devotees, a Vaishnava. So what does that mean, not associating with those? So Lord Rishabdev, he elaborates on that. Lord Rishabdev says that in order to be able to perform this tapandivya, this divine sacrifice, you have to associate with mahatmas. You have to associate with devotees who are advanced and you can follow. So it's a principle. It's a principle that is there in the whole Krishna system. In the Bhagavad Gita tells that in such a wonderful and deep way. You know, just in the third chapter, Krishna says that, you know, In the beginning of creation, he sends mans and demigods along with sacrifices, the performance of sacrifice. And by the performance of these sacrifices, this tapa, and then you can achieve, you know, all the desired things that you need to live happily and then go back home, back to Godhead. So the principle of sacrifice is there. So then how do you get to that? That was the third chapter. Then how do you get to that? Then the next chapter is transcendental knowledge. You have to achieve transcendental knowledge to be able to properly perform this divyam tapa, this tapam divya. You have to have transcendental knowledge. You have to understand who is the beneficiary of the sacrifice. You have to understand what is the process of doing sacrifice. You have to understand who are you and what is your goal of this sacrifice. You have to understand those things. So you do that by transcendental knowledge. How do you obtain transcendental knowledge? Well, you have to approach a tattvadarshi, a mahatma, and you have to associate with. So that principle is important. And Lord Rishadev said, on the other hand, if you associate with people who are stri sangha or that are attached to sex and woman, or vice versa, but basically you're attached to sex life, and that's what you talk, that's what you think, that's what, you know, the whole thing, then your path to hell is wide open. He says that. The path to hell is wide open. So therefore, this is a very important lesson. In this case, well, although Lord Shiva is being victimized, but he was victimized by the potency, by the Lord himself, by his potency. It's Krishna himself manifesting the supreme manifestation of this principle of, but he is being attracted to Krishna, to Lord Vishnu. So it's in another, you know, level. It's like, you know, Bhishma Dev fighting in a warfare with Lord Krishna and throwing arrows at Lord Krishna. You know, externally it appears that he's antagonistic to Lord Krishna, but that was in another level. He was also, you know, making offerings of flowers to Krishna, and Krishna is receiving with great pleasure the piercing of the arrows in his body. You know, and the blood is coming, and Krishna is like feeling ecstasy, and Bhishma Dev is feeling ecstasy. So this thing is at another level. You know, so similarly, Lord Shiva's interaction with Mohini Murti, this is another level, but they depict something. You know, and there is a very important lesson to learn from this. I'm going to finish also with another famous quote that Prahlad Maharaj mentioned in his prayers to Lord Nrisingadev, and Prabhupada also quotes this verse very, very much. It's a famous verse. It's 7:9:45. Yam maitunadi grihamedi sukam hituchan. Grihamedi sukam means the happiness of the grihamedis. What is that happiness of the grihamedi? The grihamedi means a householder that is embracing this culture of sense gratification. The grihasta is a household that in, that is embracing the path of self-realization, of sacrifice. So Grihamedi Sukham. Sukham means happiness. The happiness of the Grihamedi is that sex life is the greatest happiness. And they feel this that the word that is used, kandu janena, like you rub your hands to if you have an itch, you know, you go like this, and then you're trying to calm the itch, you know. So he says sex life is compared to rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, so-called grihastas, who have no spiritual knowledge, thinks that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness. Actually is a source of all distress. So that's a reality. The reality is that although we've been indoctrinated to believe that yes, sense gratification will give me happiness, and I'm on sense gratification, sex life is the greatest happiness, so let me focus my life in obtaining these things. And simply it is compared that I have this itch, I want it. And then what happens when you have an itch? You know, you ever have an itch and then you start to scratch? And then what happens? You need to scratch more. It doesn't calm it. It actually makes it even worse. So in general, if you have an itch, you have to leave it alone and it will go away. But if you start to scratch it, then it becomes worse. So this trying to calm this itching by this way, it just makes it, you know, more distressful. So therefore, these people, the Grihamedis are called Kripanas. Kripanas means that it's the opposite of Brahmanas, Prabhupada explains. So Brahmana is someone who knows the purpose of life. Kripanas is someone that is the translation for a Kripana is a miser. So someone who doesn't understand the purpose of life, who have no knowledge, spiritual knowledge. So so a Kripana, a miser, is someone who has something very valuable but doesn't use it for the benefit of anyone, nor for himself, not for anyone else. So you have this very valuable human body, but you completely waste it. You don't use it for yourself, for your benefit. You don't use it for the benefit of others. So therefore, it's a Kripana, a miser. The Kripanas, the fools who are just the opposite of Brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are Dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching, are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. So, so the important thing is, as for the teachings of the Bhagavatam, Lord Rishabdev, Prahlad Maharaj, is that ones have to don't become caught in this culture of sense gratification. Rather, by association with great devotees, by carefully avoiding association intimately with those who are attached to sex life, and by the performance of this process of tapo divyam, divine sacrifice, one can only have a progressive way of purifying oneself and coming to the position of self-realization, and which is a position of happiness. Therefore, the recommendation is there, very, very important. Any comments or questions? back to Jordan, Prabhu.
When it comes to associating with family, I'd like to know more clearly, like, what is the line of, what is our obligation, how far should we go to kind of keep them at ease a little bit, like give them our association. Is that necessary? Is it recommended? Is that, it seems like that's what, in general, that's what we're recommended to do. But how far and how dangerous is it in the long run to associate with family?
Yeah, it's there's danger. So we have, first of all, we have to know our limitations. We have to have a sense of our limitations. Second, you have to being able to follow your spiritual authorities and their guidance. So if we are under the guidance of a Mahatma and we hold to those instructions, then there is protection. When you start to sort of go away from that, then you're vulnerable. My Guru Maharaj, one time, he explained it, because it's a principle that it just not only applies to family, how to deal with family, but it's a principle how to deal with material energy. Because anything, we're vulnerable to any display of material energy. We're already infected by that, the desire to enjoy the material energy. So you could be very vulnerable in any stage. So when you enter Grihastha Ashram, when you are in the Grihastha Ashram, you have to deal with material energy. You have to deal with possessions, you have to deal with the opposite sex, and you have to deal with all kinds of things, So my Guru Maharaj says that the instructions given by the spiritual master is like a circle, a protective circle, and you can function within that circle and you always be protected. He compares it to the circle that Lakshman draw around Sita and say, as long as you're within this circle, no danger will touch you. But if you step out, then you can be vulnerable. So the same principle applies. So in the case of family, you get instructions from the spiritual master of how to. We can have contact with those situations, and if we follow those instructions, then we'll be protected. And those instructions will depend on the individuals, how some individuals maybe do not associate. Some individuals maybe go and associate, serve. Show like that. I hear from my Guru Maharaj things like, be normal. He have mentioned that to some disciples. They have mentioned that publicly, answering this type of questions. Just try to be normal. Show by character. Share your character. We go there to share, to give association. Sometimes we hear that. Rather than to take association. And then what is the meaning of taking association? Does it mean that, okay, how can you be there and don't take association? The question of taking association is getting too much intimate, in the intimacy of, you know, my, you know, whatever sense gratification conquest, and you know, getting into the details of all that stuff. You know, people like to talk about that, especially intimately. They like to talk about their, you know, the things that they're doing that are important for them. So one have to, as long as you're within, somehow there are no, you all probably experienced that you were just with your family, and you can, you know, maybe you have experienced that, how to navigate with that, and you navigate it successfully. What was that makes you navigate successfully through it? Then it was that, you know, it was your service. You were doing it as a service. That's what you heard, you know, from a spiritual master, and, you know, like that. It's a service. And, you know, when it goes into something that you know, okay, red light, red flag comes out, you know, your brother wants to talk about, you know, oh, that girl, that, you know, that type of thing, or this movie and that thing, you go, hey, let me go and get some water or something like that, or you know, sort of squeeze out of it, you know, like that. And you know, one navigates through it. So to finalize, it depends on the individual. But always we have to be under guidance in how to deal with material energy. And that will protect us. And that principle will apply in everything. Everything. So that's why it's very important that we establish a deep relationship with the spiritual master or a spiritual guide. Yes, Jaini Daibro.
I think this is a good topic, so I'd like to ask again just so there can be further elaboration on it. Like, even in terms of just having to call our family members and speaking to them. So, I mean, the principle there, like, the general principle in dealing with non-devotees is we give association and we're not taking it. And if we're speaking to someone who's not interested in Krishna consciousness, who can't really appreciate it, and we just let them go on their way, right? We offer them something, they take it or not, that's their business. But then when it comes to family, it's the situation due to some, I'm not quite sure what the responsibility is there. Frankly, I'd rather not have any responsibility there. But there is apparently some responsibility. It's the instructions we must call our family, and then the situation is we're actually doing the exact opposite. We're actually deliberately inquiring about all their mundane things as if we have any interest at all, which we don't at all. I frankly don't care at all. Yet we're required to inquire about all their mundane nonsense and let them talk about it. And 100% with 100% duplicity, appreciating that. And at the same time, even though they respect us and like are interested in our life, they have not a single iota of appreciation for what we're doing, not because they don't want to appreciate what they're doing necessarily, but because it's literally impossible for them to appreciate what they're doing, what we're doing here. So that makes it impossible to speak about, right? So if you try to speak about it, you could maybe speak about it in mundane terms, right? Which is denigrating to what we're actually doing here, right? So we're basically, like you mentioned, like if someone's talking about, you know, his sex life or something, you have to squeeze out of the situation somehow. And of course, that's the most gross manifestation of it. But on a subtle manifestation, it's all disgusting, even if they're just talking about the news, you know. Yeah. So basically, we're squeezing into a situation that we have to squeeze ourselves out of due to this bodily affiliation with these nonsense people. So I don't really understand the instruction. Maybe it's, the thing I get is, okay, there's some family obligation, like there's an element of duty there. Maybe there's also this element of, you know, ISKCON's reputation. Like, you know, we don't want to be some crazy cult that disassociates with crazy people who are just interested in eating, meeting, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. You know, it's like, for me, it's just completely duplicitous. It's seeming, yeah.
Yeah, it's not black and white. There's a whole spectrum to it, you know? That's how I understand it. So it really depends on, you know, many different circumstances and situations. For some, it will be more black, some it will be more white. You know, for most, it will be in between somewhere. So with our immediate family, say our parents and siblings and like that, immediate family, there's a connection that is there. And it depends on the relationship. Like, there's some families that are, it's common, families that are so how you say when they're not good, dysfunctional. Some families that are so dysfunctional that, you know, it's just better that to forget about it. You know, I mean, what you get, the only common ground is negativity. So, what is the use? It's better to avoid that, you know. So that's going towards a black area. And there is, you know, there are situations that when you get families that most Kali Yuga families are dysfunctional. I mean, most of us Westerners are messed up by family, you know. But then there is a part that, you know, there's people who care for you. I mean, they're already also messed up, but they do care. So, and according to those levels of caring, you know, we're not robots, you know. We're devotees is supposed, you know, with cultivating, you know, kindness, compassion, because, you know, we're trying to embody the kindness and compassion and tolerance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees. So, you know, we naturally will appreciate, you know, positiveness, something positive. So those people who are connected to us circumstantially in this life, then those are, you know, they're immediately there, you know. There is a natural connection, so why not sharing? And when we share, means that, you know, that I respect them, but I also they learn, if there is positiveness, if there's caring, they will learn to respect you. How you will allow, you have to allow them to know what are your boundaries, because that's how a relationship starts to, you know, form strongly, when, you know, there's an understanding of boundaries. So, for example, my mother, you know, I have a very strong relationship with my family, you know, and none of them is that devotees. They're favorable because I'm a devotee. So they're positive, you know, but none of them are devotees, you know. I mean, my mother was open, because I'm his son. So she will go and, you know, try it and do service and this and that, you know, and but she would eat, you know, feathery creatures, you know. and you know, watery, what fish creatures, you know, like that. But when we go to their home, she knows, she got to understand that, okay, there's some pots that she will keep there that are not used for, you know, cooking any meat. You know, so that type of thing. So you, they learned, you know, your boundaries. You know, he's a vegetarian, for him this is very important, and we respect that. So then, you know, that's how the relationship builds, you know, in terms of, and then in case, when I talk to my father can talk. I mean, he's a sweet person, really sweet, and very gentle, very positive. But, you know, he's old now, and as they get old, he needs to talk more. So he talks and talks. What does he talk? He talks about politics, he talks about this, he talks about the situation and this and that, how he knew this, how he know that. And then you go like, So what do? You tolerate. You know, I mean, am I taking it in? It's like I'm bored like anything. Oops, he doesn't hear this. but you know, I love the guy. You know, I'm grateful about him. I'm grateful because I think that relationship that happened with Guru Maharaj has been the type of openness that I have to my Guru Maharaj. It came from the openness that I have with my father. I was very close to him. So, you know, that sort of influence also made me very easily to, you know, just open to my Guru Maharaj. So I appreciate my father very much. And, you know, and I tolerate his thing. And because I share with him and I show my appreciation, you know, that relationship fits. And then what happens? He's open to anything I am. And, you know, they benefit because of that. So I think when my Guru Maharaj says, be real, means, you know, we're persons, you know, we have feelings, we appreciate, you know, positive things. We appreciate, you know, caring. We appreciate, one, you know, those things, principles. And then, and we don't pay attention to the things that are negative. We try to focus on the positive things. It's not that we don't see the negative things. We just, our focus is the positive things. So we share on the positive things. The negative things is, then people get to know, the people who care for you and respect you, they get to know, yeah, this guy is a devotee. You know, he's a spiritual. My drunken uncle will go, as you know, they will, you know, he will come all drunk and give me a hug and say, you know, you're so spiritual, I'm so proud of you, you know, you're always so spiritual and things like that, you know, and God. And then, you know, and then that's, he know, they know, they, this guy is like a priest, you know, like a God thing. So they know, you don't go to a priest and say, hey, you know, this girl and this, you don't talk like those things, you know, they respect. So that's, I don't know, that's how relationships build. I think you have to be normal. You can, you know, cross one person out or some people out just because they're non-devotees. Otherwise, imagine how in the world we would have become a devotee if that's not the mood of the devotees, you know? I mean, I was just like, you know, the guys that we're dealing with, you know, that comes and take prasadam, you know, with no consciousness and, you know, like taking. Well, that was me. I was bad. No. I mean, I was hardcore bad on taking. I would come with a box, not with a container, with a box to take the place for my three friends, because I was the only one who was shameless enough to actually come every day to take prasadam there. The other ones, they were, you can't go there, my My girlfriend would say, no, you know. I said, I take the prasadam for you guys. So I would take, you know, so I would go like that. So that was me for like a year and something. So basket case, like, you know, like, but somehow other, you know, by my Guru Maharaj and devotees, clever devotees. This clever devotee says, you know, you saw this guy, you know, well, hey, morning prasadam, can I come? Yeah, but you have to come to the program. You have to go to, you know, chant some rounds and then, you know, sure, morning prasadam, free? Come, Bhagavatam class. Then finish. Game over that way. All right. Yes, Prabhu. Bring the microphone.
Thanks for the class, Prabhu. I've been practicing the regulated principles for many years now, right? But it always seemed like, you know, that I just started, you know. My question is it ever a time that you can, you know, say, well, I got this lust thing under control and, you know, I don't have to be on guard, you know, all the time like this? Does it ever come a time, you know, like you can relax, you know?
Yeah, we were discussing that the other day, when you become a pure devotee.
No.
Even to the point of Baba, which is ripe, you know, just a little more and you're there, pure prema, you can fall down. So as long as we have this body, it's also, you know, the stuff is there. The difference with a pure devotee and the rest of us is that the pure devotee is absolutely not affected. Prabhupada say, what's the difference between you and me? Remember that? He says that I can be in a room full of naked women and I am completely unaffected. That's the difference between you and me. So, as long as we have a body, the stuff is going to be, you know, because that's what this body does. It's a bag of, you know, of that. So the pure devotee doesn't become affected. The rest, we can become affected. So on the higher stages, we learn to tolerate. We don't act on it. We just tolerate. And then what we're doing right now by practicing? We're practicing, you know, controlling that, tolerating. And, you know, sometimes we go, you know, we're knocked down by it, and then we stand and practice tolerating and not acting on it. So that's the process of sadhana bhakti until it becomes, you know, we become more acquainted and better at it. So we keep practicing, but it's not going to go away. Yeah. That's why we have to get out of this business. That's what Prabhupada said. All right? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.